Hello again, Nightmare Society. I'm extremely happy to report that we made it onto a list. I was sent an article from Medium.com yesterday titled, 50 Best Podcasts of 2019 You Probably Haven't Heard Of. To my delight, there we were, the Nightmare Society. We also just breached 30,000 downloads, which blows me away. I'm also happy to report that I've been receiving more stories directly from you guys, which I love. I'm looking forward to narrating these in the upcoming episodes. And last but not least, I wanted to say hello to a few listeners who've reached out via email or social media to say hello. Jessica the Spud Cook, Danielle at Lumos Knox, Jen at Disjointed Heart, Mateo at Mateo M. Dav, and Michelle Tate, who's a paranormal investigator on the Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunters Academy TV show. Thanks for listening, guys, and thanks so much for reaching out. And finally, a huge thanks to user Baby Zombie, user Let's Call It Love, and user Cosmic Kitty for sharing their stories with us tonight, so that this episode might be possible. So get comfy and prepare yourself for another episode of
The Nightmare Society.
Several years ago, I was in a bit of a financial pickle. I was 21 with a crappy job history, a crappy job, and crappy credit. You know, like most 21-year-olds. My living situation went sideways, and I had temporarily moved back in with my folks. As anyone who's had to move back home as an adult will tell you, this was a terrible, horrible situation, and I was in a rush to get back out on my own. Which is why when my best friend, who was in a similar position at the time, told me that an apartment had opened up at her shady complex, I actually jumped at it. If you're from around here, then you'll know that every apartment complex in that town is kind of shadester. But for those of you not from here, this place is a shady non-town outside of another non-town, with more liquor stores than any other establishment, and several apartment complexes with no credit checks, and same-day move-ins. A couple of months went by, and while the cops did occasionally show up in our parking lot, and you had to watch your step for more than one broken bottle, it wasn't the worst place to live. I worked the night shift at a large retailer shuffling around freight in the back, hating every moment of every shift. So, one night while I trudged up and down a ladder like a zombie at work, my cell phone fell out of my back pocket at the top of the ladder. I grabbed at it, obviously missing, and died a little as I saw it smack the ground and go black. No amount of restarting or shaking could fix it. The LCD was completely shot. I decided this was a good enough reason to go home mid-shift. Remember that thing I said about a crappy job history? Yeah, you can clearly see why. Driving home at 3 a.m. on some random weekday. Night shifters know how weird it is keeping track of actual days of the week. I turned onto the dark back road that led to my apartment building. I saw something faintly up ahead, in the road, and immediately think it's someone's dog. I pulled up slower, praying that I wasn't coming up on someone's dead pet, and saw that there was actually a teenage boy laying on the side of the road waving. There was a bike laying in the dirt next to him. Holy crap. The kid saw me and jumped up, weaving towards the driver's side of my car. Now, I may have made a lot of poor decisions at this point in my life, but thankfully I hadn't gone completely brain dead. I suddenly thought of all the warnings to young women about how serial killers and rapists would lure girls in by playing to their kind hearts. I locked the car doors but cracked the driver's side window.
Are you okay? What happened? Let me get some help.
I got hit by a car. They left me. I need help.
The kid looked dazed and was scuffed up, but something about him also set my nerves on edge.
I'm gonna call for help, okay?
I grabbed at my cell phone and then remembered that it was basically useless due to its ladder plunge.
Ugh. My cell phone is broken, but I live nearby here, okay? I'll get help.
I hoped he didn't think I was lying, but then I didn't care. The kid slammed his hand against my car.
Just let me get in. I need help now.
I promise. I'll get help and come back. Everything's gonna be okay.
I felt torn. I wasn't going to let this kid into my car. But at the same time, I couldn't blame him. If I was scared and hurt, I would probably be frantic too. The kid slammed his hand against the car again, and I started driving. I hadn't been exaggerating. It was a 30-second drive to my apartment. I didn't have a landline, and I didn't want to somehow lead this kid to my empty apartment with no way of calling for help. I saw my best friend's boyfriend's car parked in her spot, and immediately was thankful for the stroke of luck. I ran up the steps to her apartment and began banging on the door. Roy answered the door, probably expecting a crazy person, and was immediately even more alarmed to see me.
What's going on? Why aren't you at work?
I breathlessly explained that some kid had been hit by a car off the back road, but my cell phone wasn't working, and that I needed him to come back with me. Melanie, my best friend, emerged from her room, sleepy and equally confused. Roy immediately took charge, told us both to get into the car, and drove us back to the boy. The kid was still there, waving us down. Roy, who is a large man, Mel, and myself got out of the car.
Help! I need help!
I'm here to help. My friend saw you and came and got me, okay? Calm down.
I just got jumped by this gang man. They beat me up and stole my backpack and rode off.
The kid said frantically. I immediately became alarmed. That's not what he told me at all. I looked at Mel, my face clouding over.
I thought you got hit by a car. Why did the gang jump you?
What? Yeah, they beat me up and then someone hit me with the car.
Plausible. I was still confused, though. Roy also seemed wary of this change in the story.
Listen, man, let me call an ambulance, okay? Can you tell me your name?
At this, the kid lost his mind. He screwed his face up and clenched his fists, hitting the side of his head.
No, 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 no. Just let me in the car, man. Just take me to your house.
Roy was done.
That's not happening, kid. I'll call an ambulance and the police, and I can wait with you till they get here, but we cannot bring you back with us.
The kid slapped the side of his head some more, and then, in the most disturbing thing I've ever seen, grabbed fistfuls of his shaggy hair and began pulling it out of his scalp. That sound is still the most disgusting and alarming thing I've ever heard. Roy gave Mel and I a get-the-heck-out-of-here face, and we jumped back in the car.
I'm calling the police, okay? I'll tell them that you've been hurt and you need an ambulance.
Roy began dialing, and the kid began stomping around and screaming.
Take me to your house! Just let me get in the car, why won't you take me home? F*** you!
The kid stood in the street, blood trickling from where he'd torn up his scalp. Roy got back in the driver's seat and spoke with the cops as the kid raged outside. He then came to the window, staring so intently at us that I felt like my skin had shriveled up and fallen off. He began kicking the tires, and Roy, clearly over it, drove off, the kid grabbing frantically at the back of the car. Roy drove past our turn, around Peters Creek twice to avoid leading the kid to the apartment complex, and then back down our road. The kid was gone. The bike, the kid, just gone. No idea where he took off to. Clumps of his hair were still in the road. We never saw the kid again. We searched the papers and internet to see if he'd been picked up, or if any other strange things had happened that night, but nothing else ever showed up. What confuses me still about it all is why he would demand to come back with all three of us. One person could obviously be easily overtaken, but what the heck were his plans for all three of us? I work at a gas station on a main route. We see a lot of travelers passing through. Only one person works each shift, and it's a 24-hour store. We're short-staffed, so I agreed to an overnight. I'm female. I work in a state that's always had self-serve gas stations. So this guy comes in. I ask him if he needed any help. He says no, he's getting gas at the pump, but needs to use the bathroom. I go back to work on whatever invoices we got yesterday. The guy uses the bathroom and then goes back outside. About 5 minutes later, he comes back inside and tells me that he's confused about the pump.
You might have to come outside to help me.
Customers don't often say this. They usually just complain that it's not working, so I'm already feeling weird about this guy. I shake it off because he looks like a nerd and I don't feel afraid of him, really. I look at the register to see what error it came up with for this pump, and there were no errors. The register doesn't even say it was in use. Even if someone tries to pay and nothing's wrong with their payment, it will at least say payment/loyalty timed out. But literally, it had no sign of him trying to use it before asking me for help. I ask him if he wants to just pay inside. He agrees and gets his wallet out of his car, then pays $10. I give him his receipt and he says,
"Can you come help me? I don't understand the machine."
"We really aren't allowed to leave the store during overnight shifts. Is this just me here and it's not safe to go outside?"
I don't know why I told him I was alone, but he wasn't seemingly threatening. He proceeds to go on to say,
"I don't understand what it's asking me. I need help. I'm not scary."
I tell him again that I can't go outside because it's a store policy for the overnight shift and say,
It's not that you're scary, I just can't go outside. I would have to tell a little old lady asking for help at this hour the same thing."
Which is true. We can't even take out the trash during overnights. He starts to walk away from the register counter now, but then again stops at the door and asks me one last time to come outside and help him. I'm pretty annoyed at this point. I've said no twice now. I'm not going, so stop asking. I finally say in a super annoyed tone,
"Okay, all you need to do is one, pick up the nozzle. Two, select fuel grade button, and three, put it into your tank and squeeze the handle. I'm not going outside."
Then he finally goes back to the car, and the register tells me he had no trouble pumping the gas. Also, his plates seem like they're from the state I work in. This kind of thing wouldn't make me suspicious usually, but the fact that he originally opted for me to go outside instead of bringing money inside at 3 a.m. is weird. Along with how he didn't bother to use the pump before he came inside to ask for help, claiming it wasn't working and him not taking my first no for an answer. No means no, in every circumstance. So, potential gas station abductor, let's not meet again. Just a quick note regarding this story. This story reminds me of a true crime case I've heard of. A man named Robert Generoso began stalking a young woman named Sarah, working at a gas station in Las Vegas. He visited her on a daily basis, kept asking her out, never taking no for an answer. Becoming tired of him asking, she finally said, "Sure, call me sometime." He called her at the gas station 10 minutes later. She skipped the date, which set him off. He began relentlessly stalking her at work and at her home. I believe this was the case, too, where her and her friend went to her home to gather some of her kids' stuff up so they could stay with family, because he had been stalking her at her home and breaking into her house. When they pulled up in the driveway, they both had a horrible feeling. They walked up to the door and then last minute decided to just leave. They later found out he was just inside the door, waiting to attack her when she entered. From what I remember, after many weeks, actually I think it was months, of him stalking her and threatening her, she got a call from the police saying that she'd been linked to a homicide. Her best friend and co-worker had been murdered. The killer left behind his wallet, with Sarah's name and address in it. The man who claimed to be Robert Generoso was actually Stephen Peter Morin, a serial killer who was later put to death. He pled guilty to the murder of the co-worker Carrie Marie Scott, and was later convicted of 3 additional murders. Morin was said to have been good-looking with money and a nice car. But Sarah said something was just off. Always trust your gut, no matter how the brain tries to rationalize. Luckily, Sarah did, and barely avoided being the victim of a serial killer. Last year, I had my 21st birthday. Along with celebrating with my friends, my boyfriend's mom wanted to take me out as well. So, his mom went ahead and reserved a table at a bar in downtown for Saturday night. Saturday night comes and there's major traffic, but it's always packed in downtown on the weekends, so this is expected. His mom and I park in a toll parking lot and we have to walk about 5 blocks to the bar where we are going to meet my boyfriend and everyone else. So we start walking and arrive at a crosswalk we have to wait at. There's maybe 8 other people standing at this crosswalk with us. I'm just patiently standing there minding my own business when suddenly I notice this girl standing next to me. She startled me, to be honest. One, because of how she seemed to appear out of thin air. And two, because of how close she was standing next to me. It almost felt as if she was trying to huddle into me. Like you know when a little kid is shy and will try to hide behind their parent. Yeah, that's how she was. Except she was just leaning into me, and she had her shoulders hunched over. Her hair was black and long, at least down to her waist. She had on a long striped dress that went down to her ankles, a leather jacket and sandals. She looked to be around my age, but she had dark tan skin and black eyes. Her attire was normal, but she did not act normal. She was being really weird and kept plugging her nose as if she was smelling something bad. And she kept skittishly looking around as if she expected something to pop out and grab her. To be honest, she was acting like a scared animal. But her demeanor was cold. Her eyes felt like they were dead and empty, and her face held no emotion. So, not liking how close she got to me, I took a few steps to the side. And guess what? She stepped towards me and got as close as she was the first time. What? I sort of thought that was weird, but gave the situation the benefit of the doubt. Plus, the crosswalk light turned green right after she came close to me. So, I figured I didn't have to deal with her because we would walk our separate ways. Right? Wrong. She walked across the street and the first few blocks with me, staying the same closeness she was at. No matter where I moved to, no matter how many times she almost got lost in the crowd of people, she would scurry up right next to me again. All the while plugging her nose and looking around everywhere. She made me feel weird. My boyfriend's mom at this point confronted the girl, saying,
"Hey, do you need something? Are you okay or what?"
To which the girl responded,
"It's not safe."
After she said that, she slowly lifted her head, cocked her head slightly to the side, and looked me dead in the eyes. Her mouth quivered. My boyfriend's mom and I just looked at each other like, what the heck? At this point, I just wanted to get away from this weirdo. It was bad enough she wouldn't stop invading my space and following me. But now she's saying this weird crap while looking at me. Boyfriend's mom pulls me to her and whispers in my ear,
"Walk faster and don't look at her. I want to see if she's following us."
So that's exactly what I do. And guess what? She follows us all the way to the bar. Despite my boyfriend's mom telling her to please stop getting so close to us, she responded with,
"I want to stay with you."
We took unnecessary turns to see if she would turn to follow us. She would. I was freaking out internally all the way there. We finally get up to the bar, whip out our IDs as quickly as we can so we can get inside and away from the freak following us. You guys, she followed us inside and sat at our table. But she sits at the furthest side of the table, and she starts to scoot herself over, but she only moves over when we look away. You turn your head, and boom, she's managed to hop one seat closer to you, and she's just staring the whole freaking time and with this freaking blank expression on her face. My boyfriend's mom has had it at this point and gets up to tell the bodyguard to make the girl leave. The bodyguard comes and tells the girl she has to go, and she actually starts to argue with him. I didn't catch the whole conversation over the loud music, but I caught the girl asking him why she had to leave, and saying she can sit anywhere she wants to. She began to get really aggressive once he told her that this table was reserved for us and our group, and that she was not part of it. She got all fussy and looked at me with malice before she got up and stormed out. But she didn't leave right away. She stood outside, looking in at me through the open patio at the front of the bar. She wasn't moving, and seemed to care less about the hustle and bustle of the people around her. She stood there for about 15 minutes before finally leaving to who knows where. There was just this really bad and dark feeling that I got from her. She made me really nervous for some reason. And she just felt wrong. I mean, she was probably someone just cracked out on drugs. But it was super creepy, and I hope I never see her again.
This story also had photo submissions, which I will put on my Instagram at Nightmare Society Radio, mostly because you cannot really make out the identity of the person, but you can see the creepy way in which she is stalking them.
Again, thank you so much to our contributors, user Baby Zombie, user Let's Call It Love, and user Cosmic Kitty, for sharing their stories with us. I would love to make it to 35,000 downloads by the end of the year, so if you guys would be kind enough to share the podcast with other people who you think would enjoy it, I would greatly appreciate it. Also, please continue to send your true horror stories to nightmaresocietyradio@gmail.com. Follow me on Instagram at nightmaresocietyradio and on Twitter at society_radio. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, sweet dreams.